Yeah, we don't do very many good old boy, old school preacher illustrations on here, seems like. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Weekly Podcast. This is episode 25. I'm Brian Sheely.
And I'm Ryan Joy.
And thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. We've got a jam-packed episode here today.
We're only doing jam-packed episodes lately.
Always jam-packed. And we're going to be answering the question today, what do you want? So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But before we get into our Jesus Said segment, again, as we mentioned last episode, we are starting a brand new project that we're calling Bible Geeks Daily Download. It's going to be a brand new podcast. It's already available. So if you go to BibleGeeks.fm/daily, you can sign up to receive that. You can also go to our website. You can watch the videos. You can read the articles. We're going to be releasing a little 3 to 4 minute clip every single weekday starting August 1st. So 1 week from now.
And you can sign up to get the text in an email too.
If you go to the bottom of our website, you can find a little sign up sheet there, and we will ship you free of charge a little Bible insight every single weekday. So definitely sign up for that if you're interested. But now let's jump into our Jesus Said segment. And you've got a verse for me this week?
I do. So we're in John chapter 20 with this one, staying in the book of John.
Okay.
And let's start in verse 11. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb, and as she wept, she stooped to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white, sitting where the body of Jesus had lain, one at the head and one at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. So what do you think?
This is one of those interesting times after Jesus is raised. He's kind of a mischief maker after he comes back from the dead.
Very mysterious, too.
He is very mysterious. He's sneaking up behind people. He's hiding in plain sight, you know, as he's there with the two men on the road and they don't know who he is. And he's being real quiet about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that Jesus asks questions that he already knows the answer to.
Yeah, he does that a lot.
Like, we ask questions because we don't know the answer most of the time. But Jesus is asking a question that he certainly knows the answer to. And so for me, it highlights the fact that Jesus is leading us through our own thought process. He's leading us to consider what it is that we really want, what it is that we really think.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he needs to know that, because he already knows that. But here in this case, he's wanting her to really work out the question. Who are you looking for? Whom are you seeking?
You know, it speaks to the power of questions and, like you say, a different purpose for questions than just to find out an answer. But the power of planting a seed in someone else's heart or creating this hanging, unsettled loop, you know, in someone's mind. It's like whenever you ask a question, if you just yell out a question in any room, everybody is going to start thinking about that question and try to figure it out. I feel like we've talked about that early on in this podcast, but I've long been a lover of questions. And what you said really makes me think about how Jesus uses questions. And really, besides stories, questions seem to be his favorite way of teaching, which when you think about a question, it's not really teaching anything. Mm-hmm. It's more like leading or coaching or guiding or mentoring or, you know, this discipleship leader where we are following and he is directing by questions. You ever watch the Olympics and watch curling?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
I love any sport where you can use a broom and sweep in order to win a sport and get a gold medal. But, you know, whenever you go curling, somebody has that curling stone that they're sliding across the ice, and then somebody else is taking a broom and creating friction. They're guiding, they're getting things out of the way, they're making a smoother path. They can make things go further than they would go otherwise and go towards the direction they want it to go. And so Jesus isn't pushing that stone. You know, Jesus isn't pushing the people he's asking a question to. He's just creating a path for them if they're willing to step into it. He's making an opening for them. And so she has to think about, who am I seeking and who might this be?
Well, there's no other obvious answer, right? I mean, of course she's looking for Jesus. That's why she's there at his tomb. Mm-hmm. So it's such an obvious question. Like, he doesn't just shut down the conversation. He gets her to keep talking. And as she continues to talk, it reveals here that she is thinking that somebody has stolen Jesus's body. And then he uses that opportunity just to simply say, Mary. Mm-hmm. And boom, right there, she knows. Something is different about this gardener behind me.
You know what it makes me think of is that the sheep know the shepherd's voice, you know, right. and the shepherd knows the sheep by name. He knows each one, and he just says her name, and she gets it, and she knows who he is. And this keeps happening with the resurrected Jesus. There's something about him that people sometimes don't recognize, this newly resurrected body, right away, but then they eventually see him. And with the story of the two men on the road to Emmaus, they don't recognize him in this whole long conversation when he's explaining why the Christ had to suffer from all the scriptures. And then they sit down to eat with him. He breaks bread and they recognize him, and then he disappears.
Yeah.
So this kind of thing keeps happening. But in this case, just imagine Jesus saying your name and immediately, I know who this is.
Well, and this is not the only time that Jesus asks this question.
Yeah.
Whom are you seeking, or what are you seeking, or what do you want? So as we continue this conversation from the Jesus Said segment, let's get into our second segment, which is Here's Your Sign.
Here's Your Sign.
We're continuing to look through the miracles of Jesus recorded in the book of John. And here we are at our third miracle, which is Jesus healing a lame man. And through the process of this miracle, he asks this same question again. In chapter 5 of the book of John, we see that there's a Jewish feast going on. Jesus then goes to Jerusalem to be a part of this feast. And this is particularly, this day is on the Sabbath day. And that's going to become important here in just a little bit. But we're introduced to this venue that's a pool by one of the gates, and it's called Bethesda, which means house of mercy, where there were a bunch of blind and lame and paralyzed people who would sit under these covered porches surrounding these pools. And apparently there was some interesting thing going on at this pool. Anybody who would dip themselves into after the waters were stirred up, they would be healed. And you'd think in the story that this would be a more amazing thing to continue talking about, but John doesn't even really acknowledge how amazing this pool is. He's using this as kind of a stepping stone to show something even more amazing, which is Jesus and his power to heal. And he goes on in verse 5 of chapter 5 to say that Jesus sees a man who had been unable to walk for 38 years. And apparently this man had been sitting by the pool, and anytime the waters were stirred, someone would beat him into the pool. And so Jesus sees him.
Evidently, only the first person to tag the water gets healed. Or yes. That's the belief.
And he asks him, do you want to be healed? So there it is, kind of a similar question to what he asks Mary in John 20.
Seems obvious.
Yes, of course. Do you want to be healed? Well, I've been lame for 38 years. Of course I do. And Jesus simply says to him, get up, take your bed, and walk. And he does. Jesus then meets this man who he's healed later on in the temple in verse 14, and he deals with his real problem. And I think this is beyond just the miracle itself. I love that John records this conversation that they have, because Jesus says to him, see, you are well, sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. So this is more than just his inability to walk. This is his inability to walk without sin.
Yeah, I'm still struck by that first question. Do you want to be healed? That's the first thing in this miracle that jumps out at me, just because it would seem like an obvious thing. And Jesus is putting it back to the man.
Right.
Putting it back to him to clarify, to confirm, this is what I want. And it just highlights the importance of will, of desire. Throughout everything that Jesus is doing, he is not going to be able to force anyone to do anything. He has put that limitation on himself. And so whether it's being healed spiritually or being healed physically, I mean, you could say he poses that same question to us. Do you want to be healed? Mm-hmm. But what he really needed was not for someone to take him down to the water. What he really needed was Jesus to speak authoritative words to him. And so Jesus' voice, just as later on in verses 28 and 29 of this chapter, we find that Jesus' voice is going to call the dead out of their graves. Here we find that Jesus' voice will call the lame to walk, and they will stand up and do it immediately. And of course, that speaks to our lameness spiritually. And the physical things that Jesus can do, but it speaks to this question again, do you want to be healed? Do I want to go and sin no more and to find the ability, the strength, and the mercy to be healed?
I find it really interesting that this is one of the first miracles that John records, at the very least, that Jesus is now taking the initiative. So in the miracle that we looked at the very beginning, with Jesus turning water into wine, he was just minding his own business. And his mom comes up to him and says, there's no more wine at the party. And she calls on him to take action. And then we saw in our last miracle where he heals the official's son. The official comes to him and says, my son is sick and I know you can heal him. And so a request is made of Jesus to fix that situation. But Jesus here sees the need and decides to take action himself. And so this is one of the first times that we've seen this in John, where he's taking the initiative. He's taking it on himself to step in. And I think for me, there are a lot of people who ask me for things, who want things from me. And then I do it. And I say yes, and I step in, and I do the thing that's needed or necessary. And that's a part of it. That's important. But at the same time, I think it also highlights the fact that I need to be the kind of person looking around for people who haven't even asked me for things that they want or need. Look around, see what people need around me, and step in to help in kind of an unsolicited way, where it's not just that, well, they haven't asked me, so I didn't do it. And I don't know about you, but truthfully, for me, that's really hard, especially in marriage, where, you know, Sherilyn asks me, take out the trash, or can you put out the recycling, or can you vacuum the floors, or, you know, whatever it is that she's going to ask me to do. Mm-hmm. I find that really easy to deal with. Like, you've asked me for something and I will take care of it. But I think where I really struggle is looking around to see the things that she hasn't asked me for, that I know she needs, or I know she wants. Or if I was observant at all, I would just pick up on it and I would figure it out. But I think sometimes we're just so, and I'm just so introspective or self-focused rather than being focused on others, where I should be looking for those opportunities to help other people, even if they haven't asked me. Mm-hmm. And so maybe probing questions like Jesus asks here, what do you want? Are a helpful tool in being able to bear someone's burden for them and help them in ways that they need, but they just haven't expressed yet.
That's really interesting. So in other words, we can kind of, even though we don't have the power to do what Jesus did, we can ask Jesus' question to others and carry Christ with us in his example. Like, do you want to be healed? Especially with the gospel, we can kind of ask that question, but just going around to people or to our wives, you know, do you want help? It is really interesting. Something that Adrian and I have realized is we really value each other's partnership in thinking together through difficult things. You know, when one of us gets stuck in a maybe a not the best attitude or trying to work through a problem, it's really valuable to have the other one come in and guide us through it. But you cannot barge into someone's inner life and do that. You have to be invited. So we always ask basically this question, like, do you want me to think with you on this? Do you want me to kind of coach you through this or think with you? You know, can I get involved and ask the hard question here? Are you not ready for that? And you just need someone to understand you or to sympathize or to, you know, just be on your side for a minute before bringing the truth bombs in.
Men, maybe, and especially me, my natural tendency is to want to jump in there and fix everything. I'm going to barge into the conversation and, well, let me tell you what you need to do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not the question I need to start with. Maybe the question I need to start with is, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know, and what do you want could lead to, do you want somebody to listen to you? Or do you want to just have me sit here quietly while you vent your frustrations to me or whatever?
In this case, Jesus is even more specific. He offers the solution, but he asks if they want it. And that's something we can do too, you know, because here's the hard part is a lot of times people don't know what they want, or a lot of times I haven't made the decision that I want to get unstuck, for instance, you know? So I ask Adrian sometimes, or she asks me sometimes, do you want to stay angry or do you want to get through this? You know, do you want to get past this?
And I think that helps us figure out what we should want.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, do you want to fester in your frustration right now?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, I don't want to do that.
Well, another question that goes with it that's kind of like, you know, do you want to be healed? It's a lot of times once I feel like, you know, she's been heard or we've talked about it, I will ask, do you want to pray about it? And what I'm really asking is, are you ready to pray about it yet? Because I know we're going to pray about it because that is the pathway to starting to move forward, is getting the Lord involved. So yeah, this question, what do you want? What are you seeking? There's a critical word there. Want, seek. What is at the heart of that?
That's where we're going to go in our next segment, which is heavy words.
Whoa, this is heavy. There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
So we're going to look at this word, fellow, which is translated here as want. And there's a few other words throughout the Bible that are companion words to this one. And I think it'd be a useful conversation, hopefully, to talk about this word itself and then figure out some of the places that it's used and really just dial this into, what do I want?
Yeah.
So what does the word actually mean, this word fellow?
Yeah, so this word fellow means want, you know. It can mean to want, it can mean what you purpose, what you will, what you're aiming for, what you're deciding, and it can mean what you enjoy, what you take pleasure in. But at its core, it's what I want. And then the partner word that goes with it throughout the book of John is this word zeteo, which means to seek, which, you know, that can also mean to want or to ask for something, because you seek what you want. And so Jesus keeps asking people these questions, as we saw with Mary, whom are you seeking? Zeteo. And with this guy right here, this paralytic, what do you want? Do you want me to heal you? That's thelo. And this goes all the way back to John 1:38, where we see Jesus first ask disciples, what do you want? Or what are you seeking? And that's zeteo. So if you think about this idea of wanting, what key verses come to mind for you?
Well, John 15, in verse 7, Jesus says, if you abide in me and my words abide in you. And again, abide is another one of those loaded words.
Oh, yeah.
But if you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this, my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. Mm-hmm. So really connecting with what it is that we wish, what it is that we want.
Mm-hmm.
On a very surface level, it almost feels like a genie in a lamp, you know? Mm-hmm. You kind of get that same language or that same idea.
Make a wish, whatever you wish.
Exactly. That is not what this is about. God is not a genie in a lamp that we just rub and he gives us three things that we want. But there's something deeper here, and it really goes to where our desires line up and meet with what God wants and with what Jesus wants.
Yeah, Jesus says that he will give life to whom he wishes.
Right.
And so whenever our desires line up with what Jesus desires, what the Father desires, then we will find more than just receiving our wish. We'll find the path that we should be on. And whenever we're on that path, then yeah, we have this authority from Jesus because we're doing everything in his name to ask and be given that help, that blessing that will forward us in his will, in those blessings, because our will and his will are aligned.
We see very clearly what it is that his purpose was all about. We see very clearly what motivated him, what we should be motivated by. We see very clearly what righteousness is, what the right path is.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a relationship with him, if we abide in him, and his words abide in us, then that is going to mold and change what we want. And I think that's a big, big thing we need to think about is not just wanting what we want, but changing what we want and molding what we want to really fit with what God wants us to want.
That is the idea that I have been just working with myself all year this year, and therefore I keep bringing it up to the congregation in my lessons, is this connection that Jesus keeps bringing home over and over again, this connection between what you are and what you seek. So if your walk with Christ isn't going how you might hope it would go, if there's something in your life that you think you would want to change, the first place to start would be to change what you want, like what you really want. Because what we say we want and what we actually seek after with our time and our energy and our heart leaning into is often not aligned. You know, you say you want to be a great disciple, or you say you want to be a great dad, or you say you want to evangelize the world, but whenever you get home from work, you turn on the football game or you shut down and go into some other mode instead of pursuing those things. What you really want is something else. You want comfort. You want pleasure. You want people to just leave you alone. You want whatever it is you want, success, accomplishment, more stuff. Your life is telling you what you want if you're paying attention. So then we have to come back to, what do I really want? And if Christ is abiding in me, if his presence is really with me everywhere I go, then he's going to begin to shape what I want, or I'm going to want more of him. He will be what I'm seeking, and therefore I will pursue the things that he wants.
I think it'd be helpful here to look at John 7, verse 17, because Jesus says, if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching, which he's referring to his own teaching, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority. If you really line up your will with God's will, that's going to lead you to know whether Jesus is who he said he was.
Mm-hmm.
But if your will is not lined up with God's will, if your will is just rogue out there, you know, winding around, then you're never really going to know the right things. You're never really going to come to the right conclusions or have the right interpretation of the scriptures. You're going to be off in left field somewhere because you're off the path.
Yeah. You know, there's another insight in that verse that explains a lot to me, and it goes right in line with what you're saying, but it helps us understand something a lot of people ask is, why is it that only some people see and believe these things that Jesus is teaching whenever, you know, it would seem that God would want everyone to understand it and people are reasonably intelligent. They should be able to understand it and come to faith in it. And here we get one of those core pieces of insights in the Bible that help us really piece together what's going on when someone doesn't believe. And this is one of the critical ones. What I usually want to do whenever I am trying to decide whether I want to believe and do something is I want to understand it first.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know whether the thing the doctor is telling me is actually going to help or not before I go ahead and do it. I want to know if this product is going to be useful and do the things that it says it's going to do before I purchase it and start using it. But with God, things are a little different. Here's what Jesus says here. If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching's from God or not. So you have to start with a commitment to obey it, and then you'll have an understanding of it. And this has gotten me in trouble sometimes whenever I didn't have that. The problem a lot of times is not that the scriptures aren't clear. The problem is that I just don't want to do it. You know, why do people have so much confusion over marriage, divorce, and remarriage, or over church discipline, or over different issues like that? Is it that the Bible is not clear? And I'm not saying every single issue in marriage, divorce, and remarriage is super obvious and clear. But a lot of the time, if we're honest, the truth is pretty clear, but we are not sure if we've decided that my will is to do God's will no matter what.
I think of this illustration occasionally, and maybe this fits in here, but if you were to take a piece of paper and you were to draw a perfectly straight line right down the middle of it, and then that would represent God's will. That's what he wants. That's his standard. That's what we're trying to follow. And then if you were to take a pencil and put it down on the page and just close your eyes and try to draw the same line, it's probably not going to line up perfectly. And it might intersect with that line in a few places. A lot of times we look at those two lines, God's line, his will, his standard, and our line, and we focus on the times where they intersect. And we say, oh, well, I agree with God here. I agree with God there. I agree with God in that area. But that's not enough, right? Like, you can't just do whatever you want and have this wavy line all over God's straight line and just focus on the times where they intersect. That's not the same line.
Yeah, we don't do very many good old boy, old school preacher illustrations on here, seems like. But there's a great preacher illustration for that that I've found helpful over the years. So the story is a father is a farmer, and he tells his son, I'm going to go away. I want you to build the barn on the west side of the property. I want you to build the house on the east side of the property. And I want you to build the well in the northeast corner. And so he leaves and he builds the barn on the west side. He builds the house on the east side. But then he realizes, you know, I could dig the well right in between the two. And that way it would be easier access. It would help everybody. And you know, my father would appreciate that. So that's what he did. And the dad comes back and he says, why didn't you do what I said? Why didn't you follow my directions? And he said, well, I did what you wanted on the house and the barn. I just found a better solution for the well. And the father says, no, you didn't do what I wanted on any of the three.
Right.
You did what you wanted on all three. And it just so happened that our desires aligned on the house and the barn. And what that highlights, of course, is that the place where we find out whether we're obeying God or not is where we don't want to do it, or we're not sure, we just automatically agree with God on this thing. That's where we find out, am I obeying? Am I trusting? Am I walking in faith?
Is my will to do God's will?
Exactly.
So what's another key verse that helps highlight this idea of what do you want?
In John 6 and verse 67, after a bunch of people have left Jesus and have stopped following him, he turns to his disciples and he says, do you want to go away as well? You know, do you, fellow, do you want, is that what you want, to leave as well? And of course, Peter had one of those really good Peter moments where he said, Lord, to whom shall we go? Like, if there's other options, maybe we could consider it. But to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life, and we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. And that's, I hope, always my answer whenever something would pull me away, because I'm not sure if I want to do this thing or agree with this thing that I realize he has the words of eternal life. I can't think like I have options here. I can find no one but Jesus, no one like Jesus. And so I just align my will with his and stick with him no matter what.
Jesus is kind of doing the opposite of the curling sweeper.
Yeah.
Because he lays down basically a bunch of sand or rocks in front of the people who are following him. He says some extremely challenging things to them so that he can clarify who's really following him for the right reason.
Yeah, I mean, another way to think of it is their curling stones were going in the wrong direction. And yes, by him trying to offend them, he is in his way trying to give them an opportunity to see how to really follow him, as he's doing with the parables where he's making a judgment on people when he tells a parable and doesn't make things clear. He's making a judgment that they're not ready for the full truth, but he's also offering mercy because he's giving them their best opportunity to hear what they can and to be led slowly towards where they need to go. He tells them the truth in order to challenge them here, and that pushes them away.
He's giving them the choice. He's not forcing them. He's not saying, you have to stay with me. He's saying, you have to make your decision. I can't strong arm you into being a disciple. You've got to want this. You've got to really desire this. And if you want to go, well, now's your chance.
That same question that he asks Mary in John 20:15 from our Jesus said, whom are you seeking? He also asks to the people who come to arrest him. He asks it more than once. Whom do you seek? You know, so different people are seeking different things, and different people are even seeking Jesus for different reasons. And some people are literally, it really reminds me of the way people talk today. Some people literally say in the book of John, he is a good man. You know, some people say he's a prophet. People say different things about him, but those who seek him and come to believe based on these signs, they're seeking him as the Lord and the Messiah.
This is not a matter of being forced into anything. And with that freedom or flexibility, our will, our desires, what we really, really want is a big key component to that.
It is, yeah. I did an exercise recently that I read about. Warren Buffett, one of the richest guys ever, went to his pilot and told him to make a list of the top 25 goals he has for his life. You know, so it's kind of like asking, what do you want? You know,
right.
And so this pilot made the list and Warren Buffett said, okay, great. Now circle the top 5 goals. And so he thought about it and he did that. And Buffett said, okay, now what are you going to do with this list? And he said, well, I'm really going to focus on these top 5 goals. That is really important to me. Now I've kind of gotten some clarity on what I want to do with my life. And Buffett said, okay, well, what about the other 20? I said, well, I'm going to focus on those too, but I just don't think I'll focus on them quite as much. I'm going to just work on all of these with a main emphasis on the top 5. Which sounds like what most of us do, because there's a lot of things we want. And Warren Buffett said, no, you misunderstood the exercise. Those 20 that you didn't circle are your avoid at all cost list. Avoid at all cost, because if you try to go after 25 things, you're not going to accomplish any of them. So I made a list of 25 things. And by the time you get to 24, 25, it's kind of hard to think of some of those. Like, how many things do I really want deeply? But what's really hard is choosing those top 5. And you realize there is not a lot of room for the many things you want beyond trying to do what you need to do to follow the Lord and take care of your family and try to do meaningful work. What is there? You know,
yeah.
There's not much. And so that was a really helpful exercise for me, just zeroing in, what do I want? And does what I want align with what the Lord wants?
So let's get into the challenge for this week. And I think it's going to be sort of tied to the exercise that you just talked about.
It was really helpful to me. So I would recommend that for others to just make a list of what you want. Really think about it and think, what do I want? And then really prayerfully consider, does this line up with what God wants for my life? Is what he is seeking what I am seeking?
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can find us on our website at BibleGeeks.fm. Again, you can also follow along with us on our brand new daily download podcast. Head over to BibleGeeks.fm/daily to find out more information about that starting August 1st. And we're also on social media. We are /TheBibleGeeks wherever you might find us. Until next week, everyone, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.